eight, Billy got picked on at school for things he couldn't change. He tried his best to play it cool, but in the seventh grade, you either fit right in or you don't fit. That's just the cold hard truth. I wish that I'd have been the friend that Billy never knew. I think it's time to come together, you and I can make a change. Maybe we can make a difference, make the world a better place. Look around and love somebody, we've been hateful long enough. Let the good Lord reunite us till this country that we love's undivided.
Yeah. Welcome back.
You either go to church or you're going to go to
the second hour of today's Road Warrior Radio broadcast, this Monday, October 30th, 2023. And I intend to do a bit of an explainer. Let's see. I talked about the ghost of Maurice Strong in the first hour, among other things, and how the rewilding initiative seems to be pushing forward. Grandparents warned us 50 years ago, speaking of the loggers and lumberjacks and the folks in the woods who had meetings with fish and wildlife types who said, hey, we're being sent to these secretive meetings and there's some weird stuff we're hearing that we're not supposed to talk about, but here's what's going on. And they're going to try to rewild, the North American continent and push people out of these beautiful interior places. It's been interesting to watch this unfold. And now all these years later, some grandchildren remember that. I've heard people I went to high school with in these kinds of areas talk about it. My grandpa said, they were going to try to do this. And what is happening is the lifeblood of these places is being killed off. There are no more rugged people. We don't have the heavy equipment operators and, the forest husbandry types, the rugged types that we used to have. Butte was considered the wealthiest town in the world at one point. It was quite a place. PBS has their documentary they run, Butte USA, I think is what it is. That's interesting. But there's more, and things are going full tilt, breakneck speed in a particular direction. And, we have evidence of things that we're not paying attention to. All those folks who explained stuff to us through the 90s onward, there were warnings before then. It really kicked into high gear in the 90s when things really got serious. A lot of things got serious. The international war machine and so forth. But, there are all those folks who gave us all those warnings. The old guard, so to speak. They were right, and we didn't listen. We didn't heed the warnings. We didn't heed their warnings. And here we are. We're hearing a lot about so-called Israel these days. Let me just start with that real quick. And let's just do this. I'm just going to throw this out, and it's rhetorical, basically. No comment necessary per se. I don't want to argue about it. In other words, intellectual discussion, civilized discussion is fine, but a lot of times that seems impossible for whatever reason. So a lot of people want to point to Occam's razor in a lot of things. The simplest explanation is probably the most likely. And then, you know, we hear a lot about Hanlon's razor these days. Never attribute to malice that which is adequately explained by stupidity. And I would sort of combine these in the way that I do when I look at this thing called Israel. It was established through British intrigue. And, you know, Zionism is, what correlation does Zionism have to Orthodox Judaism? What correlation has Zionism to Abraham's descendants? You know, my question is, if Occam's razor is a thing and the simplest explanation is usually the most likely, then if I look at Genesis 12:7 and the King James, and the Lord appeared unto Abram, this is before his name was changed, and said, unto thy seed I will give this land, and there builded he an altar unto the Lord who appeared unto him. In the NASB 95, the Lord appeared to Abram and said, to your descendants, I will give this land. So he built an altar there to the Lord who had appeared to him, to your descendants. So what correlation does Zionism have to Abraham's descendants? Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. Jacob had his name changed by God also, like his grandfather Abraham. God changed Jacob's name to Israel. What correlation is there to this covenant with Abraham and his descendants? If Occam's razor is in full effect and the simplest explanation is most likely. Similarly, you know, never attribute to malice that which is adequately explained by stupidity. Well, if there is no adequate explanation, when we are led down certain what you might call conventional channels, then what do? When no adequate explanation, even including stupidity, seems to exist conventionally, then what do? It seems like it's evidence of a conspiracy and the opposite is in full effect. Indeed, I think that's sort of the purpose of Hanlon's razor, to throw us off the trail, throw us off the scent. Anyway, we had all those warnings. Charlotte Isserby created her Patriot Honor Roll. We posted that on RBN back in 2020. You can still find it, Patriot Honor Roll. And I created a similar thing back in 2019. Talked about it a few times. This was after Tex Mars had recently passed away. And, you know, ironically, John in Tennessee and William in Montana called into that broadcast that I did December 4, 2019, talking about this stuff. They called in, and now I would say that they're on my own Patriot Honor Roll in recognition of, you know, in homage to Charlotte Isserby and the others. So, you know, these people warned us. The Tex Marses, you know, I have some interesting names on my list. Elijah Cummings, Joseph C. Wilson. You know, and he had also passed away recently on my list, but you know, he wrote the New York Times opinion piece, What I Didn't Find in Africa. Red Beckman. So many folks these days, you know. So many folks have been added that list, you know. The Sam Blumenfelds, the William Blooms. Um, our own John Stadmiller, obviously, Michael Collins Piper, so many other folks, you know, Dr. Stan Monteith, Rick Adams, the Radio Avenger, Ralph Winterroad, the Truth Seeker of the Far North, so many other folks, you know, so many warnings. And yet here we are, you know. We are schizophrenic, it seems. Evidence of mental illness. And, you know, we have other folks. I mean, Fred in Iowa, speaking of cognitive dissonance. Pat in Texas. A lot of crusaders fighting for truth, justice, and the American way, shall we say. And yet, here we are. It's interesting that, you know, you don't have to be well-versed and articulate on the problem to know. Like I said in the first hour, it's interesting. You have people running around screaming like, you know, Chicken Little, the sky is falling. The Chinese are coming to get us. They're coming to get us. Get out of my way. I got to get over to Walmart to get me some, you know, more goods produced in China. How does that make any sense? I think that's evidence of mental illness. And I'm not being glib or sensational. Truly. I think it's a mild, at least a mild form of insanity. If we really were concerned in America, millions and millions of people would not be shopping. Tens of millions of people would not be shopping. Let's just say, let's pretend for a moment, you know, let's use the Fox News demographic. You know, let's use the last election cycle's numbers. Let's say 70 million people. Are somewhere on the spectrum of believing that China's coming to get us. Somewhere, a little bit, a lot, whatever. There are many millions more who didn't vote. Let's just say, let's round it out at 100 million. That'd be about a third of the country, a third of the population, from what we're told anyway. 100 million people. If that was truly a thing that we were concerned about, wouldn't shop at Walmart immediately, effective immediately, not ever. Why? Because it is suicide, whether fast or slow. And then who knows what would happen? Do we make anything here anymore? I know a person who talked about this over the weekend, and this person talked about not shopping at Walmart, felt personally convicted, but couldn't find things made in America anymore. And anything this person found was crap. Had to really look, hunt, you know, high and low, search high and low, find anything made in America. It's astonishing. So we have no industry left here. I mean, like, you know, personal initiative and industry. I'm sure capital wants some capital somewhere, surely, wants to preserve whatever is worth preserving here in America. Capital and industry can't get together except offshore. Interesting. So we had warnings, and yet here we are. And things are pushing forward. So I mentioned during the first hour my personal experience running around in the woods over the weekend. It's hunting season, so I had occasion to drive around a bit in the woods, the Montana wilderness. And I keep seeing more and more roads blocked off, gated off, rewilding. It's not that I think that's a bad thing per se. It's what it represents. And it represents the initiative that Maurice Strong talked about at the 1992 Rio Earth Summit. Speaking of Patriot Honor Roll, Dr. Michael Kaufman certainly makes the list. And, you know, these people who have made obscene fortunes like Maurice Strong, raping the land, then becoming the poster child for environmentalism. Are you kidding me? Boy, that's something. We need to rewild the entire North American continent. All the red areas need to be rewilded. The whole thing, the whole map is red, for Pete's sake. Good grief. And now it's happening piece by piece, bit by bit, in very interesting sorts of ways. In the crown of the continent area, for example, 10 acres here, 40 acres there, things are being bought up and put into conservancy. My question, where does the money come from? The logging and mining industries have come to a halt, all but come to a halt. In the Montana-Idaho corridor, there were, you know, there used to be a considerable amount of mining. And everything gets tied up in litigation for decades. Where is the money coming from to do that? And why? So here's the other example that I was talking about. The ghost of Maurice Strong is alive and well, it seems. Maurice Strong's rewilding initiative seems to be working in absentia. CNN article, abandoned golf courses are being reclaimed by nature. But wait, not so fast. That's you know, a misleading headline. How are they being reclaimed by nature? Editor's note, call to Earth is a CNN editorial series, a Maurice Strongian series, committed to reporting on the environmental challenges facing our planet together with the solutions. Problems and solutions. You have a reaction there, and the solution is provided real time so that you can get on board. Rolex's Perpetual Planet Initiative has partnered with CNN to drive awareness and education for Bernaysian education, maybe propaganda, around key sustainability issues and to inspire positive action. You're being nudged. You feel nudged? I do. So the article reads, golf courses, despite occupying large green spaces, are not necessarily good for the environment. Land is often cleared to make way for a fairway, and maintaining the pristine turf often requires a lot of water, regular mowing, and the spraying of fertilizers and pesticides, none of which is good for biodiversity. Biodiversity. In the U.S., with the number of courses, course closures outweighing new openings, and that's there's a link there to the National Golf Foundation, U.S. course openings and closures trend from 2022. In the U.S., with the number of course closures outweighing new openings every year since 2006, some are questioning how we should use these huge spaces and asking whether, instead of golf, nature should be left to run its course. Lots of fun wordplay in this article, by the way. Many people, including yours truly, have noticed, you know, the Pacific Northwest, the Spokane, Washington area in particular, has been historically an amazing, what do you call it? An oasis of golf. Golf in every direction, 30 minutes to some of the best golf in the country in any direction. And it used to be super inexpensive, ridiculously inexpensive. Now, there, like everywhere else, it shot up. It's ridiculously expensive now. And I wonder if that has anything to do with the closure. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Hello, hello, hello from beautiful Colorado. My name is Samuel Jung Kay, and I am currently the lead shilaji hunter and master herbalist for Colorado Shilaji Company. In this video series, I will be discussing what we believe is the greatest of all adaptogenic superfoods and the single greatest natural healing remedy gifted to us by Mother Earth. I think you too will become as excited by this incredible substance called shilaji as we were and are after our discovery of this amazing gift right here in beautiful, colorful Colorado. You may already know shilaji by other names: shilajit, momio, momi, mami, mineral pitch, asphaltum, and others. Shilaji literally translates to destroyer of weakness and conqueror of mountains. Shilaji has been in use for thousands of years and is considered as the highest valued cure-all of any earthly substance.
Look for the gold mountain and medical symbol logo in banners on republicbroadcasting.org to watch the full video and see more information. Use code GORBN when ordering. That's G-O-R-B-N.
The secret to aging like fine wine is in the vines. Syrah grape seeds and skins contain high levels of flavonoids and resveratrol. Fermentation breaks these organic compounds down into smaller molecules, penetrating these therapeutic ingredients deeper into the skin, delivering faster and more effective results. Our handmade fermented skincare products are formulated with all natural ingredients and do not contain any phthalates or parabens. Similar products can cost as much as $180. At Natural Earth Medicine, we source our ingredients from local Arizona vineyards and cold process our oils to ensure that our customers receive the highest quality product in its purest form. Learn more at our website and try our fermented skincare products today. Visit naturalearthmedicine.com. That's naturalearthmedicine.com.
Reluctantly crouched at the starting line, engines pumping and thumping in time. The green light flashes, the flags go up. Churning and burning, they yearn for the cup. They deftly maneuver and muscle for rank. Fuel burning fast on an empty tank. Reckless and wild, they pour through the turns. Their prowess is potent and secretly stern. As they speed through the finish, the flags go down. The fans get up and they get out of town. The arena is empty, except for one man still driving and striving as fast as he can. The sun has gone down and the moon has come up. And long ago somebody left with the cup. But he's driving and striving and hugging the turns and thinking of someone for whom he still burns. He's going the distance. He's going for speed. She's all alone. All alone in a time of need. Because he's racing and pacing and plotting the course. He's fighting and fighting and riding on his horse. He's going the distance.
Welcome back. Oh my gosh. It's so ridiculous what we're seeing. It's, you know, again, I mean, let's just go with what the bad guys are always saying. If Occam's razor is the thing and the simplest explanation is true, then when do we factor in, you know, Occam's razor and Hanlon's razor? There has to be, what is the counter to Hanlon's razor? Never attribute to malice that which is adequately explained by stupidity. When the evidence seems to point to an effort to create plausible deniability, but it seems to indicate malice. You know, a COINTELPRO, Gladio archetype, strategy of tension type of scenario. What about that? Patrick Claussen is the one who explained to us back in 2012 the traditional way America gets to war. And Wes Clark on his book tour back in 2007 told us about seven countries in 5 years, finishing off with Iran. It's interesting. Every country we hear in the news over the last that many years seems to fold into that initiative somehow. Was it Wolfowitz he said during that talk? You know, Wolfowitz, I think, was the one who said, no one's going to tell us who we can bomb. Really? John McCain seemed to think so, especially when it came to Iran. So now I'll get back to this golf course thing in a second, because this all dovetails. We're hearing, you know, it's so stupid. CNN's doing the, what is it? Police investigating threats against Jewish students at Cornell. Is it a Jewish student who's doing the threats again? Oh, wait, that's disingenuous and misleading. Is it Zionist interlopers? Is it, you know, and I need to get back at some point to the Bolshevik discussion. We in America have never had the kind of atrocities here on our own shores committed against most of us, unless you're a certain type of a person. Your family's been interned in camps or something during World War II, or you have, you know, tribal blood in your veins that you know about. Most of us have not experienced the kinds of things that have occurred, you know, especially, you know, in, let's just say, in Bolshevik sort of fashion. Police investigating threats against Jewish students at Cornell. Is it a Zionist interloper? Probably. And who do they trot out to, you know, do the explainer? I mean, you got the statement from Cornell president Martha E. Pollack, which is garbage. And, you know, who do they trot out to talk about this? None other than Jonathan Greenblatt, CEO and National Director, ADL, Anti-Defamation League. Of course. The history of Cornell is interesting, by the way. What is the video that Aaron and Melissa Dykes did? If you're not familiar, these 100 secret societies prove who really rules America is the title of the video. Watch that. There's also a really fun, speaking of Cornell, there's a piece by William Jarrett that you can actually find over at NCBI, the National Center for Biotechnology Information, interestingly enough, titled Yale, Skull and Bones, and the Beginnings of Johns Hopkins, which is an interesting discussion, and includes Cornell. Andrew D. White, founding president of Cornell, you know, Skull and Bones. And how these universities came to be. Very, very interesting. Interesting. Johns Hopkins in particular, you know, Gates Foundation partnered with Hopkins all those years ago. It's fun. The more that you learn about this stuff, the more that you realize it is a small club. And the opposite of Hanlon's razor seems to be in full effect most of the time. So interesting, the perfect timing, of course, you know, that police are investigating threats against Jewish students at Cornell. Why? Does that make any sense? Anyway, complete BS, utter BS, utter nonsense. Ridiculous. strategy of tension nonsense to further deepen Stockholm syndrome and the victim narrative and psychopathy. How dare anyone like me, for instance, or people on this network say something fishy's going on and we shouldn't send our lifeblood over there, figuratively or literally, for a conflict that doesn't involve us. Why are we doing that? Anyway, back to the golf course thing. So, you know, let me just read from this article for a second first. So conservation nonprofits and local authorities are looking to acquire. So conservation nonprofits, huh? And local authorities, who's an authority? Back to Amitai Etzioni and Henry Kissinger talking about legitimacy. Who's legitimate? Who decides who's legitimate and who's not? Which gets back to my question. The question is always, who's in charge, who decides? Conservation nonprofits and local authorities are looking to acquire golf courses that have been abandoned due to high maintenance costs, low player numbers. Well, it's not so much low player numbers. It's so darn expensive. It's cost prohibitive. Like I said in the last segment. Or other reasons. That's interesting. Isn't that an interesting little... So high maintenance costs, low player numbers, or other reasons. Which might be what? I think it's part of an agenda. And repurpose them into landscapes that boost biodiversity and build natural defenses against climate change. Climate change. These spaces provide, quote, huge opportunities for a conservation from a conservation perspective, end quote, says Guillermo Rodriguez, California State Director of the Trust for Public Land. What the heck is the Trust for Public Land? A conservation organization which is rewilding three of the state's former courses. Rewilding. It's a multiple win, he continues. You increase public access by taking former private golf courses and turning them into public properties. Yeah, for how long? Because it's in the Conservancy of the Trust for Public Land, the TPL. Have you filed your TPL report? Or no, that's TPS. Anyway, you return water back into rivers and streams and create a better habitat for endangered species that we have in California. How did they become endangered? Anyway, first on the list, San Geronimo, California. San Geronimo. Oh, you mean St. Geronimo? Take San Geronimo, an 18-hole course in Northern California's Marin County. What's her name? Pelosi's backyard. Located on two waterways, which are home to endangered coho salmon and steelhead trout. Since the course's construction in 1965, much of the water from San Geronimo and Larson Creek was being diverted to provide irrigation for the course, affecting fish populations in the area, says Rodriguez. In 2018, TPL purchased the 157-acre site and began converting the area back into its natural state, turning off irrigation, removing culverts and dams, built to capture water and start to restore the habitat by planting native species. According to TPL, the rewilding process could take up to 10 years, but there are signs that wildlife is already bouncing back, with bobcats spotted roaming the area. Oceans Meadow, California, another property, these TPL's acquisition. Nine-hole course was built in 1960s to create it. Developers filled the plain with 500,000 cubic yards of soil. TPL purchased a 64-acre area in 2013 and started restoring wetlands. Rancho Cañada, California, 190-acre private course located in Monterey. Cascade Valley, Ohio. TPL is not the only organization on a mission to rewild golf courses in Akron, Ohio. Isn't that Jack Nicklaus and Arnold Palmer's sort of backyard somewhere in that neighborhood? Summit Metro Parks acquired the 195-acre Valley View Golf Course in 2016, returning it to its natural state. In doing so, it connected three local parks and created 1,900 contiguous acres of green space. So, do we need to play the public-private partnerships video, the clip of Joan Vian here? 15 minutes, we don't have time for it. Watch it, Public-Private Partnerships by Joan Vian. They get the stuff, you get the bill. The public gets the bill, the private gets the stuff. Oh, it's a public space, right, for how long? Because it's in conservancy, not public. So this is interesting. And there's more. You know, UK, Australia, it's not just here. The first question is, where is the money coming from to do these things? I'd probably take 10 years to rewild this golf course. Who's paying for that? Ultimately, I think it's the local community, or, you know, that's probably spread out, honestly, across a network of, you know, the octopus basically will pump the blood from all of our veins to pay for this initiative. But here's a question, which dovetails back to the CNN or the CNN thing I was talking about, you know, police investigating threats at Cornell propaganda. I feel like I need to read Bernays here. Speaking of propaganda, you know, I mentioned last week, speaking of psychological operations, chapter 3, The New Propagandist, chapter 4, The Psychology of Public Relations. And please sell me a piano. Give you this story and a synopsis about the rewilding initiative that we're hearing with the golf courses in this case. So Bernays wrote in chapter 4, The Psychology of Public Relations, the old propagandist based his work on mechanistic reaction psychology then in vogue in our colleges. This assumed that the human mind was merely an individual machine, a system of nerves, etc. Like a helpless, willless automaton, it was the special pleader's function to provide the stimulus which would cause the desired reaction in the individual purchaser. It was one of the doctrines of the reaction psychology that a certain stimulus, often repeated, would create a habit, or that the mere reiteration of an idea would create a conviction. Suppose the old type of salesmanship acting for a meat packer. It's funny how this, none of these are accidental examples. These are, you know, examples from Bernays' work. Suppose the old type of salesmanship acting for a meat packer was seeking to increase the sale of bacon. It would reiterate innumerable times in full page advertisements, quote, eat more bacon. Eat bacon because it's cheap, because it's good, because it gives you reserve energy. The newer salesmanship, understanding the group structure of society and the principles of mass psychology, would first ask, who is it that influences the eating habits of the public? The answer obviously is the physicians. I had a conversation about this morning on the subject of biblical fasting. Here is how provocative this stuff is and how profound the question, who's in charge, who decides, truly is. I was asked about fasting over the weekend, and, you know, the biblical context of fasting. Is it just food, or is it stuff? And I said, well, you know, Generally speaking, I mean, just a sort of general answer. Generally speaking, my impression is it's predominantly food, almost exclusively food. But there is the interesting stuff, you know, that Daniel talks about when he's trying to understand the mystery that God has put on his heart. And, you know, Daniel fasts for several weeks, obviously, about 3 weeks. That was Daniel 10. And he says that, you know, in verse 3, he says, I did not eat any tasty food, nor did I eat, nor did meat or wine enter my mouth, nor did I use any ointment at all until the entire 3 weeks were completed. So that's interesting. We're talking about it, and I hear that there was a podcast. Somebody did a podcast about this, and a lady went to her doctor. I'm hearing this, you know, secondhand, third hand, whatever. Lady went to her doctor and said, you know, I'm thinking about fasting or whatever. And the doctor said, well, you know, since you've always been typically underweight, I wouldn't encourage you to fast. A true Christian would say, appreciate it, doc, but you know what? The good physician is my primary caregiver. The great physician, excuse me, Jesus Christ himself. I appreciate your advice, but whatever the Holy Spirit, you know, whatever I feel compelled by the Holy Spirit, that's where I'm going. And we're also told, I think it's in Titus, not to be ascetic, and, you know, the harsh treatment of the body is maybe of limited value, but godliness is profitable for all things, both in this life and the life to come. Anyway, that was interesting. The physician, quote unquote, trumps the Holy Spirit. Wow. That's interesting. To Bernays's point. So who is it that influences the eating habits of the public? The answer, Bernays says, obviously is the physicians. The new salesman will then suggest to physicians to say publicly that it is wholesome to eat bacon. He knows as a mathematical certainty, this is where, you know, Lark's admonition that these guys have figured out that in the absence of certainty, probability will do. In fact, it's probably better because it gives you plausible deniability. He knows that as a mathematical certainty, large numbers of persons will follow the advice of their doctors, even in contravention to the Holy Spirit, like I was saying. Amazing. Because he understands the psychological relation of dependence of men upon their physicians. The old-fashioned propagandists, using almost exclusively the appeal of the printed word, tried to persuade the individual reader to buy an article immediately. This approach is exemplified in a type of advertisement which used to be considered ideal from the point of view of directness and effectiveness, you know, honesty. You, perhaps with a finger pointed at the reader, buy O'Leary's rubber heels now. The advertiser sought by means of reiteration and emphasis directed upon the individual to break down or penetrate sales resistance. Although the appeal was aimed at 50 million persons, it was aimed at each as an individual. The new salesmanship has found it possible, by dealing with men in the mass through their group formations, to set up psychological and emotional currents which will work for him. Instead of assaulting sales resistance by direct attack, he is interested in removing sales resistance. He creates circumstances in which will swing emotional currents so as to make for purchaser demand. If, for instance, I want to sell pianos, it is not sufficient to blanket the country with a direct appeal such as, you, buy a Mozart piano. It is cheap. The best artists use it. It will last for years. The claims may all be true, but they are in direct conflict with the claims of other piano manufacturers and in indirect competition with the claims of a radio or a motor car, each competing for the consumer's dollar. What are the true reasons why the purchaser is planning to spend his money on a new car instead of on a new piano? Because he has decided that he wants the commodity called locomotion more than he wants the commodity called music? Not altogether. He buys a car because it is, at the moment, the group custom to buy cars. We'll get to cars in a minute, too, by the way. The modern propagandist therefore sets to work to create circumstances which will modify that custom. He appeals perhaps to the home instinct, which is fundamental. He will endeavor to develop public acceptance of the idea of a music room in the home. This he may do, for example, by organizing an exhibition of period music rooms designed by well-known decorators who themselves exert an influence on the buying groups. He enhances the effectiveness and prestige of these rooms by putting in them rare and valuable tapestries. Then, in order to create dramatic interest in the exhibit, he stages an event or ceremony. To this ceremony, key people, persons known to influence the buying habits of the public, such as famous violinist or popular artist, and a society leader are invited. These key persons affect other groups, lifting the idea of the music room to a place in the public consciousness which it did not have before. The juxtaposition of these leaders and the idea which they are dramatizing are then projected to the wider public through various publicity channels. Meanwhile, influential architects who have been persuaded to make the music room an integral architectural part of their plans, with perhaps especially charming niche in one corner for the piano. Less influential architects will, as a matter of course, imitate what is done by the men whom they consider masters of their profession. They, in turn, will implant the idea of the music room in the mind of the general public. The music room will be accepted because it has been made the thing. And the man or woman who has a music room or has arranged a corner of the parlor as a musical corner will naturally think of buying a piano. It will come to him as his own idea. Under the old salesmanship, the manufacturer said to the prospective purchaser, "Please buy a piano." The new salesmanship has reversed the process and caused the prospective purchaser to say to the manufacturer, "Please sell me a piano." So my question is, we know as a matter of history that the buffalo was killed to destroy the indigenous Native American, shall we say, population. I believe dams were created in similar fashion to prevent migration of salmon, in particular upstream, which had the same effect. Were golf courses, you know, who was Mr. Wanamaker, the namesake of the Wanamaker Trophy? Who are those folks? You know, Rodman Wanamaker. And these types. I've talked about this in the past. So, you know, look up the Ivy Club, by the way. Right around the turn of the 20th century, we started hearing about golf. And golf is a middle-class thing. To vilify it does a few things. Now, so did we get golf courses to engineer the landscape to drive people off of it? There is nary a corner in which someone can be left alone these days. I think, in simple terms, what happened was the whole world in manifest destiny sort of fashion was conquered in, you know, through British intrigue and largely the United States proxy. Just ask Smedley Butler, for example. And that was a way to make sure that no one was left untouched. And then, as I have tried to explain recently, in ancient Hellenistic fashion, that impetus has assimilated to itself all culture everywhere and then imprinted back on those conquered peoples what it sought to imprint upon them. That, for example, you know, as Hegel said, the state is God and we should all worship God. He wasn't the only one. He was one of those types. And by that, he means, you know, the character who has persuaded people he doesn't exist. The one who usurped in the garden man's dominion over creation that God, you know, his God-given creation. Anyway, once that happens and no one is left untouched, think about it. In simple terms, basically you infect everyone with a very similar mind virus. They behave the same way. We get the technological capacity to maintain that mind virus and Stockholm syndrome. Now you can start killing people off. You can engage in peak baby. I saw an article by Alex Berenson. You know, even Bill Gates talks about peak baby. Stick around. We'll be right back after this short break.
Hi, Tom Bolton for Ease Off. I know so many of you are finding our EZ4 carcass drop and lift an essential tool for your meat processing operation. But today I want to spotlight four of our new products. First, our right height hog cradles with steel or aluminum frames. Our customers love this back-saving innovation that enhances sanitation and speeds production. Next, our beef cradles with stainless steel or aluminum frames eliminate rust and corrosion. We hope you'll compare our quality and prices for this essential part of your processing line. Our cradles are especially effective when used with our power skinner. And finally, our hook tumbler will keep your hooks clean and polished. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
EaseOff, LLC, 417-932-6419.
Did you know the IRS publicly admits that income tax is collected by voluntary compliance? Get the information you need to help you avoid income tax with these five easy steps. All you have to do is go to avoidincometax.com to get your five easy steps on how to avoid the IRS income tax. Escape the IRS. Let avoidincometax.com help you. We guarantee our five easy steps or your money back. Go to avoidincometax.com.
Attention, freedom-loving patriots. Are you ready to dive deep into the principles that founded our great nation? Join me, Peter Serafin, and the Institute on the Constitution as we light the way to a brighter future with the Liberty Lighthouse Classroom. At liberty-lighthouse.com/classroom, you'll find a treasure trove of online courses on the U.S. Constitution, carefully crafted to empower you with knowledge to defend your rights and liberty, whether you're a student, a history enthusiast, or just a concerned citizen. These courses are for you. Gain a comprehensive understanding of our Constitution's principles, the wisdom of our founding fathers, and how to apply them in today's world. As a special offer to our freedom-loving listeners of Republic Broadcasting Network, use coupon code RBN at checkout and get 20% discount on any course. Join the Liberty Lighthouse Classroom and be a part of the movement to uphold the values that have made our nation exceptional. Unleash the power of knowledge and protect what truly matters, our Constitution. Visit liberty-lighthouse.com/classroom today. Don't miss this incredible opportunity. Use code RBN for 20% off. Together, we'll be the beacon of freedom our founding generation envisioned. Liberty Lighthouse Classroom. Illuminating minds, empowering patriots.
Welcome back. Just jump in quickly so we can get to the phone. So, question, you know, now I heard over the weekend some local stuff in a little tiny town in Montana, some building permit requirements, permitting nonsense that's just insane. And where's this stuff coming from? I still remember in that area, the larger area, the days when 5 miles out of town, you didn't need a permit for pretty much anything.
What?
Yeah. Now I'm wondering, where are all of these zoning things coming from? ICLEI, perhaps? International Council for Local Environmental Initiatives? Local? International? Local? ICLEI Japan, ICLEI Canada, ICLEI Europe, ICLEI Whitefish, Montana. Interesting. Who's in charge? Who decides? Two more quick stories and we'll go to the phones that remind me of this stuff. CNN stories. Why are cities cracking down on free parking? Bernays would be proud. Nathan Meyerson, published 2 days ago. Curbs. Oh my gosh, there's so much value in curbs. You know, in New York City, where only 80,000 of its 3 million curb spaces are metered, it's not curbs, it's sidewalk and stuff. So I see this as a way to get people out of the buildings onto the sidewalks, and part of the Agenda 21, Agenda 2030, Tent City initiative, basically. That's, you know, and then smart loading zones. That's a weird one. But how about this one? GM halting driverless car service nationwide after California ban. That's an interesting article published yesterday over at CNN. I encourage you to read it. Speaking of why I'm horrified and kind of depressed today, so to speak, the language, this isn't related to any new on-road incidents. Cruz said, we think it's the right thing to do during a period when we need to be extra vigilant when it comes to risk, relentlessly focus on safety and taking steps to rebuild public trust. That's all it matters. So backing up, we have decided to proactively pause driverless operations across all of our fleets while we take time to examine processes, systems, tools, etc., how we can better operate in a way that will earn public trust. That's all that matters, not doing the right thing. But here's the kicker from this article. This article actually says, listen to this, but fully driverless ride-hailing services are key to GM's plan to eventually transform its business model, selling rides rather than vehicles. Remember I talked recently about the subscription-based economy, you can buy more horsepower from Mercedes. Listen to this. GM's plan to eventually transform its business model, selling rides rather than vehicles to consumers and making more money off the vehicle during its operational life rather than through a straight sale soon after it is built. That's what they call saying the quiet part out loud lately. Astonishing. I have to apologize. James, I am very sorry. My fault, sir. I apologize. That last thing there, I don't know. What do you say? You know, that's the quiet part out loud, as they say these days. And it's right there in a CNN article. Astounding. I hope it was informative. As always, it truly is an honor and a pleasure. Take care. God bless. We'll catch you on the other side.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because big tech, big pharma, and big brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at TLBTalk.com and join the social media revolution.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.